Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You're listening to Under the Influence with S. Lim Bryant. Please welcome our guest, Victoria Broussard. Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be on the show with you today.
Okay. Tell us about Victoria Broussard.
Well, I'm a practicing attorney in the Houston area. I've been practicing law for 9 years. I am also an author, recently wrote my first novel called I, Comfortable Victim, which then led me to becoming the founder of a nonprofit organization called Beyond the Unveiling, which is dedicated to eradicating childhood sexual abuse. Basically, the whole of my experiences, whether good or not so good, is what led me to the person that I am today, as it is with all of us. So I count it all joy. And without all those teachable moments, you know, I would be in a different situation. And so I really want to change people's lives, and I want to effectuate elevated change, and that's the greatest asset that I think all of us have. So I'm just honored to be able to do that.
Okay. And the title, I, Comfortable Victim, how did you come up with that title?
Well, following a series of events that left me thinking that I had consistently put myself in situations that were not helpful for me, it hit me like a ton of bricks, actually. I was leaving a situation that was victimizing, if you will, and I realized that I had become a comfortable victim, that over a period of time, I just had allowed so many situations to change me and change my course and move me into a different direction and to be someone that I really wasn't. And so it just kind of dropped out of the sky and settled in my gut, and I started writing that night, and I didn't stop until I finished my comfortable victim about 16 months later.
Okay, okay. I love the title, actually. And what stains does abuse leave on a victim?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. One of the stains that, well, actually in my book, I call them soul stains, which, you know, we have imprints on our souls through different experiences, and those imprints can either leave a negative impression or a positive impression. And, of course, childhood sexual abuse is going to leave a negative one. What happens is that people are not able to create boundaries in their lives when they have become a child survivor turned, what I like to call in some instances, a crippled adult, because you can't really open that necessary heart space to start healing. That lack of ability, it's really a difficult thing because you, a lot of times, like with me, you really don't even realize how damaged you are. You don't know how hurt you were from the circumstance because you just kind of keep moving on with your life. But those constant encroachments onto yourself, into your self thoughts, your ability to process who you are, is what continually causes you to kind of shriek back. And then you get into these feelings of shame and guilt and blame. And all of those things are so debilitating and paralyzing. I call it the greatest hijacking of all because all of the child's development, you're just completely hijacked and you don't even know it because you think, oh, I'm good, I'm good. Like, I'm fine. I'm a lawyer, no big deal. Everything's fine. It didn't really hurt me, which is the theme throughout my book, is that, you know, oh, I wasn't hurt. I didn't get hurt that bad. I'm good. Which when you finally open that heart space up and start really living your truth, you realize how hijacked your development was, and you start to try to make sense of something that was insanely insensible. So luckily, I was blessed enough to be able to remember a lot of my childhood experiences, which I do share in the book, but I focused more so on what was happening in my mind and not what was happening to my body. And this is the unraveling that must occur in order for the survivor victor to move from shameful and blameful to blissful and gainful.
Right. So, where do you draw your strength from?
I draw my strength from a number of sources, actually. My spiritual source is, of course, the greatest strength that I draw from. Since I was a child, I had a heightened sense of spirituality. And even though terrible things had happened to me, I always knew that I was loved by my higher power and highly favored. Those were thoughts that I am able to remember having as a child, which I'm so grateful for. And so through the years, of course, I've been blessed to have so many great people in my life, and I have drawn strength from them, from their love, from their encouragement. I really just draw strength from almost anything I can that I believe has the ability to supply me strength. It's actually kind of interesting. I love nature. I draw strength from things like trees and the sun and even animals. So,
yes.
You know,
I agree with you on that. I do.
Yeah, we're all connected, and we're connected to each other. We're connected to the earth, and I really feel like if people would kind of open up some of their thought processes, they would be able to draw strength from a lot of different things. Here recently, of course, I've drawn immense strength from iComfortable Victim and journeying toward my true self and the journey that I've joined with others who are journeying toward their true self as a result of reading iComfortable Victim. So my survivor siblings are an incredible source of strength to me at this period in my life.
So are you a self-published author?
No, actually, my book is published by a company called Tate Publishing out of Mustang, Oklahoma.
Okay, I've heard of them. I have. Okay, what steps should one take to get over abuse?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, the first step is accepting your truth. You have to accept the truth of your life, what deck of cards life handed you, so to speak. You know, we hear that phrase all the time, but really you have to accept that. And in accepting that, no matter what it is, you're allowed to release your self-deception, because if you don't accept the truth, then you're really trying to deceive yourself about a truth. And that self-deception acts as a cloak and camouflages the extent of your mental and emotional damage. You can't see what happened. You can't see the results of what happened to you because you're cloaking the truth, which is why there's no holds barred in iComfortable Victim. In my book, I talk about everything. You know, I'm not holding anything back, and that was one of the most incredible things for me. When I was writing the book, I knew that I was healing. I knew that it was a healing process for me, and that there were so many people out there just like me, and that if it was healing for me, it was going to also be healing for them. But you have to open up to the truth. And, you know, one of the things I said in one of my earlier speeches was, you know, what happened to us ain't pretty, and the cleanup ain't going to be pretty either. And so I really, you know, it's like, you know, what happened ain't pretty, y'all, and the cleanup ain't pretty either. So let's just get down to the nitty gritty, you know, get down there where it's dirty and accept the truth. And then we can start working from there. So once you accept that truth, then you need what I call open, continual, and non-judgmental dialogue so that you can start exposing the crevices and the areas where the abuse has darkened your soul and created that soul stain. And then you recognize it, you see it, you kind of start scrubbing that soul stain out with that open, continual, non-judgmental dialogue. Like, now I have a lot of readers and they want to talk to me. They call me about their revelations and the things that they're recognizing about themselves now. And it's like light bulbs are going off in their head going, gosh, I never, ever thought about any of this stuff. And it's because that cloak camouflaged their mental and emotional damage, and that self-deception caused them to be able to not see who they really were.
Wow, that's powerful. So what was your writing process?
You know, I'm kind of one of those type of people that I really need divine inspiration. You know, I can create things on my own, but there's a difference. I know the difference between when I'm divinely inspired and when it's just Victoria, you know. So
right.
I just wait, and once I get like a title or the name of a character, I think on it, you know, I meditate on it, and then it just starts building up, and then more inspiration will come. Like, I already have like 3 more books already with titles and characters and themes, and, you know, it just kind of starts passing through me, mostly actually when I'm driving is when I start getting.
Yes, that's when it happens too. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
just
like,
when
oh
you're
my
driving,
God,
yeah.
Oh, it's like that for you too. That's so neat, yeah. So,
right, that's
actually,
how it happens to me too.
Oh, cool. That's neat. And then I just keep driving, and then more things keep coming. But I got my most recent book idea about 2 weeks ago, and that just tears. I can't wait to write that book.
Oh, wow. Okay, awesome. Where can they purchase iComfortable Victim?
iComfortable Victim can be purchased at your local Barnes & Noble. You'll have to go into the store, let them know that you want to order it. They'll order it for you, and or you can purchase it on their Barnes & Noble website or Amazon.com. You can also order an autographed copy from me at my website, www.iComfortableVictim.com.
Okay. Okay, tell us about Beyond the Unveiling, the nonprofit.
Oh, gosh, my baby, Beyond the Unveiling actually was born out of me writing iComfortable Victim. I knew that there was so much more to do, and that iComfortable Victim was just a stepping stone, just kind of the first layer of my mission. And so I created Beyond the Unveiling with the mission of eradicating childhood sexual abuse through a comprehensive approach that utilizes a completely out-of-the-box programming. It's slightly unorthodox, and it doesn't really fall into the methodology that we think about today when we think about programming and services for sexual abuse survivors. Because when you talk about comprehensive approach, you can't leave out the predator. And so, my programming also involves predators.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering, like, how do you help the predators?
You know, the thing about, I know it sounds a little bit, you know, off kilter, but this was the piece of the puzzle to me that made my entire life make sense. When I'd already developed Beyond the Unveiling, I was already writing the programming, and I knew there was a piece that was missing. There was something that was left that was out there, and when I got the divine inspiration to include predators, that's when all of my abuse made sense, and all of my feelings, all of my experiences with my predators. And so the reason why is because, you know, you can't talk about eradicating it if you don't get to the real problem. If predators continue to harm children, then you're never going to eradicate childhood sexual abuse. They are the reason why children get sexually abused. I mean, we've got to help the childhood person. We've got to help the survivors. But if we leave out the predators, we leave out a huge section, obviously, of the problem. And so
right.
laying the groundwork to help them is one of the greater things that I think Beyond the Unveiling we'll be able to leave for posterity.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the thing
that's
is,
really awesome.
It is, and I'm so excited about it because I think it's really going to revolutionize how predators think about themselves and how we think about them.
Right.
One of the biggest problems in this is the recidivism rate. The recidivism rate is too low, and the risk is definitely too high for sexual offenders once they're released. A pedophile,
mm-hmm.
they fall into 3 categories. You have the convicted pedophile or molester who reenters society and who may or may not be struggling with committing another sex crime or worse against another child. Then you have the pedophile or molester who has committed a crime and never been caught or charged with a crime, but may or may not be still struggling with committing another sex crime or worse against a child. Then you have your third category, which is a pedophile or molester who has never committed a sex crime against a child, but is struggling with thoughts of it and maybe needing some intervention. Well, beyond the unbent, yeah, isn't that deep? I mean, all of these things.
It is. Kind of wow, crazy. You're giving me chills.
I know them too.
Wow, that is awesome. Oh, my God. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You need to take care of the predators. Wow. I never thought of it like that. That was one question I really knew the answer to.
Yeah, a lot of people are like,
yeah.
What is she talking about? How in the world is
yes.
she going to do that? You know?
Oh, wow.
That
is awesome. Yeah. But, what are some steps to victims finding their true selves?
You know, you really have to, like I said before, that you have to start opening up. You have to expose what happened, and that's where the truth of the situation comes in. You have to not be afraid. You have, you know, when you're a childhood survivor, there are so many things that the predator puts into your head, you know, like it's your fault, of course. We've all heard that. So these things grow with you. As you grow and mature in your life, these thoughts grow with you, and you start to basically internalize all this stuff. And so you start to think, that's who I am. That's me.
Mm.
And you have to start dispelling. You have to break it down. It's almost like tearing down a building. I mean, literally, when you think about demolishing something, like you see a demolition project and you see a house or a building being destroyed, that's almost what you have to do to yourself. That's how deep this rabbit hole goes. You have to demolish everything that is in your head about childhood sexual abuse, about yourself as it relates to childhood sexual abuse, about the predators, about your family members who may or may not have known what was going on and who could have intervened but didn't. I mean, you have so many things that you have to start demolishing in order to really say, okay, I'm ready to deal with this and I'm ready to journey to my true self.
Wow. So what steps are you taking to increase community awareness?
You know, I just moved to the Houston area, so I'm in the process of building my network with, I'm a graduate of Texas Southern University. I went to Thurgood Marshall School of Law, and so I'm in the process of getting my network together with some of the people I went to law school with, some of the professors, my colleagues, and so on. But one of the things that is so important is getting into the communities. I'm also talking with different churches right now in hopes that I'll be able to go and minister to some of the parishioners there and get involved, you know, just really start handing out pamphlets, start speaking to people, you know, about some of their personal experiences, and just really make certain that, you know, we start doing educational projects where people can start understanding more about childhood sexual abuse, understanding what the consequences are. You know, a lot of young girls are finding themselves in prostitution as a result of childhood sexual abuse because there wasn't anyone there. You know, early detection is one of the most important aspects of intervening in childhood sexual abuse. If we can start identifying, increasing awareness of the damages and the long-lasting effects of sexual assault on a child. And there's so much research that still needs to be done. Public discussions are paramount because people need to know that they need to start speaking up. And there is no shame. There is no blame. There is no guilt for the sexual, the child who's been sexually abused because they didn't do anything wrong. I mean, I had to really get to a point, Stacey, where I said, I didn't do anything wrong. I am not
right.
at fault here. I have to release all of those feelings of guilt and fault and shame so that I can start doing what I was put on this earth to do, which is to make a difference in this area. So you know, there's a we need to have a comprehensive cross-section of information into the community at large dealing with the predator, dealing with the benefits of early detection, correcting certain things, fine-tuning the thought process so that we can get to the root of what causes predators to be sexually deviant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have many more questions on beyond the unveiling, but we need to get into your lawyer, your law firm. So it's 9 years of experience in family, criminal, will, and probate divorce law. So you love what you do?
I have enjoyed immensely being an attorney. I'm so grateful that I had an opportunity to be in the career that I have. It's really been awesome. More than anything, my life's mission is to make a difference in people's lives. And so through my law practice, I have certainly been able to do that. It is definitely a challenge, especially now with iComfortable Victim, Beyond the Unveiling, and traveling and all the other things that are going on. But I am still practicing law. I've moved my law practice to the Houston area and am still open for business. So, yeah, it's a blessing to be an attorney.
Okay. Did your abuse make you want to become an attorney?
You know, on some level, yes, it did. I think that there was a part of me that never wanted to let anybody think that they had ever gotten the best of me. You know, I think we all kind of have that embedded in us. You know, oh, you know, Mark will think they got the best of me. You know?
Yes, indeed. I can agree with that one.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, I'm going to show you, you know, even though you right. these things happened to me, my Heavenly Father still had a plan for my life, and I was able to rise above the place where the abuse dropped me off, which is the sentence that I have in my book early on. I say, you know, that the abuse kind of just drops you off at the corner of limp and listless, and you're just standing there going,
oh,
hey,
yeah.
Can I get a ride? You know, can somebody
right.
come get
wow, up? That's good. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, just drop right there. Like, what do I do now?
Exactly.
Consultations are free. And what if someone
yes.
couldn't afford you? What's the next step?
You know, I have been really thankful that people, when people call me, they most of the time they're referred to me by someone else that I worked with. And I just want to help people, so I'm really amenable to payment plans. You know, when people can't afford me, and my you know, I'm one of those bleeding heart type of people, and I just, my heart opens up, and I'm like, okay, well, how about this? You know, we can work on a payment plan, and can you afford this? And, you know, we start working together, and that's the building block of any good relationship, attorney-client relationship, husband-wife, is when you're working together to solve problems. And so I'm a real problem solver. When I see a problem, I'm like, okay, let's fix the problem. Let's all work together to fixing it. So I try to work with my clients.
Okay, cool. That's good to know. How do you stay focused when the legal system is so draining?
You know, I have a myriad of different things that I do to try to stay focused. I exercise, I try to eat right, you know, I try to have right thinking, I try to surround myself with people who are positive, people who, you know, understand my vision and the mission of my life, and so, and I really just try not to let things get to me as bad. I mean, I'm really working on this because there has been so many things going on, but I really try to just look at a situation and reason through it and not allow things to overcome me or overshadow me or to continually ponder something when I know I just need to release it. And I laugh. I try to laugh and have fun and not take myself so seriously.
Right. So when you have emotional cases, how do you disconnect?
I don't disconnect completely. I can't. It's just not something I'm capable of doing. my heart space opens, and then that, you know, that situation is in my heart. Like, I hug my clients. You know, it's just funny because, you know, you meet someone, especially after you've been working with them, and family law is, it's just such a difficult emotional place. And I know what it's like. I've had many of my own personal family law issues. And so I really bring a plethora of experiences personally and professionally when I'm dealing with my clients. I want them to know that they are a person first to me. They're a person first. They have needs. They have emotional, physical needs. They need to know that their lawyer cares for them. And so that's how I got to the point of offering what I call specialized services that are tailored for each person's needs, because sometimes I go in and out of being lawyer, then I become, I mean, we are called counselors, and so I will end up in many instances counseling my client and telling them that a better day is coming, you know, if they would just hold on, you know, they're going to get to the other side of this, and they'll look back and they'll go, wow, I made it through, and hopefully they'll think of me and they'll go, man, you know, she really made a difference, not only legally, but emotionally when I was going through one of the roughest times of my life, because it really is, you know, for a lot of people when they come to me, they've never been that down before. That's the first time they were ever that low. And so I get a lot of my clients are broken, and I feel that it's incumbent upon me to help put them to get back together, not just legally, but also emotionally.
Okay, awesome. So that's how they feel special when you touch the client like that. That's awesome. I have another question. How will you and how do you balance the book, the law firm, and the nonprofit?
Well, it is a juggling act, but I know that he who started a good work in me is faithful to complete it. So I really, that's one of the things that I always try to focus on, is that I'm not working alone. I know that there are, there's divine purpose in what I'm doing. And so I lean heavily on that. And I also try to, like I said, have as many positive people share my heart space who truly understand me. And I have had great mentors. I mean, phenomenal mentors, who have just taken me under their wing and have tried to help put me in a different place mentally so that I can juggle everything. I have loving friends. I have an amazing family, a great support system. And the greatest thing that I did to help balance my life is I turned in my honorary drama club subscription.
You know, right?
Yeah. Which actually, okay, you'll be so surprised how much free time turning in that subscription brings you.
Amen. Okay, Victoria, please let everyone know all your links, your contact information, your website, any upcoming events you may have.
Okay, great. Yeah, you can always reach me on the web. I mean, if you just don't know any of the things that I've said today other than, you know, my name, then you'll be able to find me. It's Victoria Broussard, B-R-O-U-S-S-A-R-D. And if you just put that in, you know, most of my stuff should pop up. I am on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. And then, of course, my three organizations have websites, which is iComfortableVictim.com, BeyondTheUnveiling.com. And just so people know, Beyond is spelled B-Y-O-N-D. There's no E in it because it goes with my middle name, which is Yolanda. And then, of course, my law practice, which is BroussardLegal.com. So on all of those websites, you'll be able to find an email address and contact me that way, and or through Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, or Facebook. Of course, on Facebook also, I have all three of those same web pages, the iComfortable Victim as a Facebook, Beyond the Unveiling as a Facebook, and Broussard Legal also has a Facebook. And The other thing we're working on now is we're working on a play. Eye Comfortable Victim will hopefully be a play in the next coming, maybe in the next 3 months. We had some delays, so we're trying to figure out if we're still going to be able to do it in the first quarter of this year. But it won't be here in the Houston area. It's going to be in Florida where my manager lives. So, and then I'll be going to Canada probably sometime in March. And I just hired a publicist, and so hopefully we'll be doing some things in Maryland and in D.C. in the next couple of months. But as it relates to Houston, right now I don't have anything on my calendar. I'm looking forward to putting many, many things on it for the Houston area. So if anybody would like to speak with me about doing any events, please, please get in contact with me.
Okay. Well, thank you, Victoria. It's been a pleasure.
The pleasure was mine. Thank you so much, Stacey. I appreciate you.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, take care, dear. Bye-bye.
Thanks.